The Lord be with you.
And also with you.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Some of the crowds who heard the words of Jesus said, "This is truly the prophet." Others said, "This is the Christ." But others said, "Christ will not come from Galilee, will he? Does not Scripture say that the Christ will be of David's family and come from Bethlehem, the village where David lived?" So a division occurred in the crowds because of him. Some even wanted to arrest him, but no one laid hands on him. So the guards went to the chief priests and the Pharisees, who asked them, "Why did you not bring him?" The guards answered, "Never before has anyone spoken like this man." So the Pharisees answered them, "Have you also been deceived? Have any of the authorities or the Pharisees believed in him? But this crowd, which does not know the law, is accursed." Nicodemus, one of their numbers, who had come to him earlier, said to them, "Does our law condemn a man before it first hears him and finds out what he is doing?" They answered and said to him, "You are not from Galilee also, are you? Look and see that no prophet arises from Galilee." Then each went into his own house. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
Well, there's a lot of misinformation floating around in the gospel today about Jesus, and if we were to look at all of them in details, you know, we could be here all day. But you know, in the end, what we see is that the one basic factual error is they said that, well, he comes from Galilee, not from Bethlehem, and the scriptures clearly say that the Christ, the Messiah, would come from David's house, from Bethlehem. And well, you know, he was from Bethlehem. I mean, you know, they're just completely mistaken about he had been ministering in Galilee, but surely he was born in Bethlehem. So there's clearly a factual error that many in the crowd are dealing with, and then of course the Pharisees and so on are divided among themselves, largely against Jesus. About the only one who makes any sense at all in this gospel is Nicodemus, and says, "Well, maybe if we have questions, we should ask him." Kind of a radical idea, right? The idea of maybe actually inviting Jesus to address us. We could, you know, ask questions, real questions, not just rhetorical questions. How dare you speak? Who do you think you are? Not questions like that, but real questions about, well, tell us, where do you come from? What are some of your credentials? You are seen by many as a prophet. Well, prophets have credentials. Show us some of those. You know, they could have gone through this, but of course, as you see, they would do no such thing. They had already made up their minds. And it's interesting the way the gospel ends. There's all this division and shouting and screaming, and they're yelling at the soldiers for not bringing him in, and the soldiers who went out with arms to arrest Jesus were disarmed by his words. And they said, well, no one has ever spoke like this man, and the Pharisees rebuked them, and they claimed that the crowds are just a bunch of idiots, they don't know anything better. Well, I wonder why they don't know anything. Could it be because the Pharisees and the other religious leaders haven't taught them? I mean, just another thought. But in the end, we have here the Pharisees, yelling at the temple guard for not bringing him in, and in the end, after all this division and blaming and so on back and forth, it simply says, then each went to his own house. It's kind of like another way of saying, you know, everyone went to their own corner, and they basically are still in opposition to each other. So, what's the point of all of a gospel like this for us? How could perhaps we personally understand it, as well as some of what goes on in the church today? I would only say that we certainly today have also many interpretations, some of them valid, some of them not, some misinterpretations of who Jesus Christ is. Some, I would say, among the more liberal Protestants, have basically reduced Christ to his humanity. He was an ethical teacher, historical figure, but they've, to a large degree, stripped him of his divinity. They no longer really regard him as such, and they take what they like of his teachings and leave. So we have that kind of that going on in some of the liberal Protestant denominations. Others, you know, of the more Pentecostal variety, I think certainly acknowledge the divinity of Christ and largely understand his teachings quite literally. But I think, just bringing it right into the Catholic Church, and one of our own struggles is how to really understand Jesus Christ. Now, I've told you this before, and we've shared this at breakfast before, sisters, that I was raised in a period of time where catechesis was extremely poor, and it was we were largely presented with Jesus the nice guy, and we were not presented with him as being strong or divine. He was kind of this nice guy who went around saying nice things and healing people. And a kind of a Mr. Rogers, you know, a kind of a harmless Jesus, a Jesus who affirmed but never rebuked, a Jesus who was nice. And, you know, you go up to kind of a mean-looking dog and you pat it on the head and say, nice doggy, you know, kind of trying to tame the animal, and this was, I think, kind of a large degree of what was going on. And if you look at the art from that time, you know, the church statues and things, that, to the degree that there were any statues at all in the 70s, they tended to be kind of thin, will-o-wispy sort of looking Jesuses, you know, kind of thin, sort of emaciated, and a little feminized too, you know, kind of the bearded lady sort of Jesus. And not a strong, virulent Christ who had demands on his disciples, not a Christ who walked among the people with strength and made strong ethical and religious demands upon them, or who demanded absolute faith. Not that Jesus, but a kind of a made up, harmless, nice guy Jesus who basically affirmed and so on. Now, again, when you open up the actual scriptures, the real Bible, and read the actual about the actual Jesus, it's a little more complicated than that. And I would say, let's start by affirming that I certainly think if we read the scriptures, that we have to conclude that Jesus had great appeal. Crowds, multitudes would come to him. The Bible says the crowds heard him gladly. That he was obviously a powerful preacher. He was one who spoke to the real needs of the people. He wasn't up in the clouds about some esoteric theological distinction that the Pharisees might or the scribes might talk about. But he spoke to people about what was really going on in their lives, and he had a very powerful appeal in that regard. And likewise, it would seem that many sinners, and people who were struggling seemed to find in Jesus an approachability. They felt they could come to him and ask healing of him. Jesus would give it. So Jesus was approachable. He was accessible. He was someone that they thought of him as being a friend of the sinner, a friend of the poor, someone who was willing to walk among them and minister. So we certainly see these very, very positive aspects, which I think kind of got absolutized in the 70s that I grew up with, the Christ that I grew up with. So I don't want to simply reject and say, well, Jesus wasn't this Mr. Rod. I mean, he wasn't, but there are aspects, I think, certainly that we should affirm of that portrait of Christ, who was kind, merciful, approachable, a healer, one who was willing to talk with sinners and was able to work and live among the poor. So clearly we have this truth about Christ. But if we look again, we also see that there were other things that balanced this. Jesus was no pushover. He insisted on a very powerful understanding of being transformed. He did not compromise with evil. He never gainsaid the truth. When he was asked difficult questions about, for example, divorce and remarriage, he simply said no. If you read through the Sermon on the Mount, I mean, again, he was absolutely uncompromising in what the commandments called for, and went far beyond some of the most strict teachers of his day. To even look at a woman with lust was sinful. To even grow anger in your heart, or to grow angry in your heart with a form of murder. So once again, a very demanding, you know, when you think about it, ethic. If you think of it as a human work, clearly the Sermon on the Mount implies that it is God who has to work this work in us. But again, he demanded absolute, unswerving fidelity to the Father, to his kingdom, absolute priority of God, of the things of God, of heaven, that if anyone loves this world or anything in this world more than me, he's not worthy of me, he cannot be my disciple. Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no life in you. Then he went away angry that day, we no longer follow him. He was not willing simply to play to the crowds and be popular. This is a strong Christ who was uncompromising when it came to questions of evil, questions of improper priorities. He simply laid it out and said, this is the bottom line. You will either follow me unreservedly, you will either accept me as Lord and God in your life, or you will perish forever in hell. He simply laid out the truth for them. So Jesus, I suppose the way we could bring all these elements together, spoke the truth in love. I think even the people who heard these difficult sayings, that many of them heard them spoken to them in love. So Christ was somehow able to combine a rather rich and vivid love for the people of God with a love that was love them enough to speak the truth to them. See, and this is a very rare combination to find in a human person. We tend to go to one extreme or the other. I mean, I suppose I, like you sisters, have heard some just angry preachers, and all they are is angry, you know, just angry. And you know, it's very possible for any preacher such as myself just to get in the pulpit and feed on it and kind of vent our own anger and feel better about ourselves, but we haven't really loved God's people and helped them. We've just vented our anger. So it's possible for someone to simply be very demanding and shout and scream about sin and rile people up with a fear about hell. It's very possible that one could just be at that extreme, but have very little love for God's people. And then there's the other extreme, which is just, you know, like, oh, and I don't want to upset anybody, and I want everyone to like me, and let me just say the nice things. And so we've got that. But to be able to combine a strong, vigorous, demanding Christian faith, which Christ did, with a deep love for God's people, such that they knew it and they could sense it, this is a rare combination. But this is the real Christ. And so I think the challenge for all of us today, getting back to this gospel, is to present the real Christ to people. Not to water down his teachings, to take off the edginess from them, to get sandpaper out and kind of make it nice and, you know, smooth. But to simply present it as it is, without compromise. But also to combine it with a very deep love for God's people. To simply allow Christ to be who he really is in the Scriptures. Not to try to refashion him, to make him more palatable. To do no harm. The do no harm Christ of the 70s that I grew up with. Father Robert Barron, who some of you may have heard of, a priest from Chicago, does a lot of work out on the internet. And he refers to the 70s Catholicism as beige Catholicism, you know. All the edginess and the colorfulness of Catholicism had been taken away. The colorful feast and the demands of fasting and prayer and rosaries and all of this had just sort of been taken away, and we were just kind of left with a bare room and a very, just kind of a nice, harmless Catholicism that basically affirmed and didn't challenge anymore and basically said, well, you know, basically we should all just be nice and get along. And that was what he called beige Catholicism, you know. But the more radical, demanding Catholicism, perhaps of the 50s and before, was largely gone, lost. And the distinctiveness of Catholicism was largely lost. And so the challenge now for us is to kind of bring all these things together again and to rediscover Christ in all of his beauty, his colorfulness, his, yes, even his anger, his zeal, his love, the full Christ, the Christ who was a man among men, the God-man among us, who was alive, purposeful, driven, had a vision, a sense of joy and glory, much more than a Mr. Rogers, but a deeply profound figure for us who should inspire, challenge, console, but also rebuke the strong, the real Christ who stand before us. Maybe a thought to conclude with, or a picture maybe for your mind. Many, all of you have been to the shrine of the Immaculate Conception, and you go in, of course, to the shrine, and they have that kind of Pantocrator, Christ in the apse, in the great back wall of the shrine, and he sits there with his arms outstretched, and many people, especially those who have been very influenced by the kind of Mr. Rogers notion of Jesus, look up and they say, I don't like that. He looks angry. You know, have you heard this concern before? You know, people, that Christ in majesty there. And he does kind of have a determined look on his face, doesn't he? Yes, in fact, you could even see a little bit of anger, a flash of anger in that face. But you know, when I walk in to the shrine, and over the years I've been in that shrine, I can't tell you how many times, and every time I walk in, I look up and I hear Christ say to me, have confidence, have courage, I have overcome the world. The strong Christ, the Christ who looks right into our eye and says, confidence, courage, take up your cross, follow after me. A Christ who will not compromise with evil in our life. A Christ who has zeal for us, you see, a passion to set things right in our life. A Christ who is strong and vigorous. You may have your own artistic feelings about that Christ, but I've come to respect the image. It is from from the 60s and 70s, not exactly high church art in terms of that era didn't produce a lot of high church art, but I've come over the years to really deeply respect that image as something which is a real challenge for our day, who have sort of watered down Christ and made him the harmless Christ with kind of a dopey smile on his face. But the real Christ, who looks right into the depths of our soul, whose word cuts like a two-edged sword into the depths of our heart and challenges us as well as consoles us, this is the real Christ, the strong Christ, the manly Christ, the one who scaled the wall for us, the one who threw open the gates of heaven for us, the strong Christ, who did battle with the devil and won. See, this is the Christ I see on that shrine up in the apse. And to those who would say he is angry, I would simply say God's anger is never against us, it is for us. God's anger or his wrath is his passion to set things right. He has a warlike look on his face because he wants to do war against the sin that ravages us. He wants to do war against the devil, who so influences us, confuses us. The Lord has a real passion to set things right. So I just leave you with those thoughts today. Here you have these chief priests, these scribes. They're all debating about who is this Jesus and where does he come from. And they have factual errors and confusion. There's all kinds of different debates about who he is. And sadly today, many of these debates continue among many of the Christian churches and even within the Catholic Church, with the capital C Church. Who is Jesus Christ? See, maybe there's a very personal answer that we all have to make to that, but there should also be a good, clear corporate answer to that. We need to, I think, as the Catholic Church, present the whole Christ, the complete Christ, the biblical Christ, and have no fear and no reserve about doing that, because that's the Christ who attracted multitudes. See, we think, well, people might get upset if they hear some of the harder things he said. Yeah, they did in Jesus' time, but also multitudes found their way to him. So I'm sure that in the end, the real Christ is the people of Christ that people need to meet.